loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to another episode of Pick and Pod, WFUV's basketball podcast. I'm Owen Kelty, joined today by Ben Oppenheimer and Lauren Mondrulli, and it's been an exciting week for the NBA. We got the draft last night, but the talk of the town is the Knicks and Nets making their first trade since 1983. But before we get into it, how are you guys doing today?
Ladies first.
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm really excited. I am a Knicks fan, so I'm over the moon about all of this news that's happening. I'm waiting on Isaiah Hartenstein. That's just going to be the last piece of the puzzle and make me even happier than I already am.
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty ecstatic to talk about the Knicks with you guys. And it's been a crazy last 48 hours, to say the least. First, we'll get into it, of course, with you, Owen, but first Mikal Bridges and then OG and then draft night last night, a lot of stuff in you know, only the past few days. So it's emotionally overwhelming.
Yeah. You talk about out of nowhere and just all at once. Tuesday night, I was just at work and all of a sudden I look at my phone. I see Mikal Bridges. It's the Knicks. I thought it was a fake notification.
Yeah. Because that was like a fan fiction for me. It was a fan fiction I had in my head.
I really thought
Josh Hart like tweeted that out. I was like, there's no way this is real.
Yeah.
So the Knicks end up trading for Mikal Bridges. They trade 4 unprotected first, 1 protected first, a second round pick, Bojan Bogdanović. The trade's not finalized yet, though. I think there's still some pieces that need to be added. I think they can still add a third team, which would make them able to re-sign Isaiah Hartenstein, which I think is the only way for them to re-sign Isaiah Hartenstein, is if they add a third team and add maybe like a Precious Achiuwa or Alec Burks to this deal. But overall, I just want to get you guys' thoughts on the trade, giving up a lot of first-round picks. And this has been the piece that the Knicks have been saving all these first-round picks for the last couple of years. So this is their all-in move. So, Ben, I'll start with you. How are you feeling about the trade?
I think it's excellent. This is a win-now move. When you think of a star player, like usually when you think of a win now move, you're thinking of you're giving out the farm system, you're giving away the farm system for, you know, the superstar, the Donovan Mitchell, whoever you want to put their name in that list. But I think Mikal Bridges is perfect for what the Knicks are looking for. I mean, he's a 3-and-D guy. He's a great defender, great outside shooter, and I think he fits Tibbs' system quite perfectly, to be honest. And then there's obviously the chemistry that he already has with his former teammates, the Villanova connection. And then what also I think is quite remarkable, and we'll see if Tibbs tries to break the streak. Bridges has not missed a game since high school. That, you know, that's incredible. You know, not a game missed. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure he'll do his best to test the limits of that. Now I'm not trying to engage in the, you know, Tibbs causes injuries stereotype, but he does give the players a lot of minutes. I think we can all agree upon that. So I think it's the perfect win now move. But it also is a win-now move in that now the clock is ticking. Over the next 3-5 years max, the goal is to win a championship. And now the pieces are there, especially with the OG re-signing and now Bridges, as we just mentioned. The pieces are there. If they can add Hartenstein, which is a long shot, but if that does happen, I think they're a championship contender next season. The thing is, though, it can't just be another make the playoffs, second round exit, or even a conference finals exit. This team is now aiming to win a championship in that 3-5 year window. If they don't do that over the next half decade, it's a failure. So the clock is ticking. But I love the deal so far.
Ben, you took the words right out of my mouth. I just know he's going to fit in flawlessly with the Knicks and Thibodeau's kind of like system that he has. And like you said, he has not missed a game since high school, beginning of the league, which has been 6 years now. I saw the stat. He has 15,479 regular season minutes, which is the most of anyone in the entire league for the past six seasons, which I just think's insane. And after we saw this postseason with Thibodeau keeping Josh Hart in 48-minute games, we know like Bridges is going to fit in nicely, and he won't be too surprised with the extra minutes that he may have not have seen in Brooklyn. And then he's also good on defense. And as we know from watching Thibodeau coach, he doesn't like playing anyone that does not play defense. So he's going to get in right away and know what to do and what he's expected of doing. And then I was looking at fitting him into the rotation because obviously this past season, the Knicks have been really injured and it was really hurting. So you saw Josh Hart starting and saw Dante DiVincenzo starting. But now that you got Bridges, you got Anunoby back, you got Randall back, hopefully they all stay healthy. I think moving DiVincenzo over to the bench would be the greatest idea ever because DiVincenzo is the insane three-point shooter. Bridges is an insane three-point shooter. So that's just going to be lethal for any other team that's coming to the Garden. Or if we're going anywhere else, they're just going to be constant threes going.
I think you also need to look at, for this rotation with bringing Bridges in, is they're most likely going to run the starting lineup of Brunson, Bridges, and Anunoby, Randall, and then depending on what they end up doing at center. But are you either of you guys concerned about the depth of this team? Because right now you're looking at a team, before the Hartenstein decision comes out, they really only have an eight-man rotation. And in the playoffs, it's an eight-man going to be an eight-man rotation, and that is a elite eight-man rotation that they have now. But they have to make it through 82 games and stay healthy. So, like, what other players do you think they need to add to this roster that can get them through the season? Because right now they're going to be hard-pressed against the cap, so they have to find some lower minimum players that are going to fill out this rotation. Because with eight players and Anunoby's injury history, Randall's injury history, especially Mitchell Robinson, they need to add some depth other places. So who are some names that you guys think that they could bring back or – in general, just add in as vetmins, maybe, or second-round picks?
Well, I just want to say, first off, I was very disappointed last night watching the draft. No disrespect to Mr. Dadier from France. I wanted the Knicks to pick up Duke center Ron Flipowski. I wanted to see that happen because I thought he would have been a good backup to Mitch if Hartenstein leaves, or if Hartenstein stays and Mitch leaves, he'd be a good backup regardless, and they just did not do that, which kind of confounded me. I didn't really understand what the thought process behind that was. But then, obviously, I guess the response would be to kind of get more availability, save money, cap space. But I think it's tough to. I mean, just to talk about looking for players, the NBA is different now. Think about this, where players that are even just role players are going to be expensive, or guys that are going to just be on the bench are going to be expensive. Think about this. Anunoby's five-year contract, most expensive in Knicks history. Most expensive in Knicks history. I found that hard to believe. Right. That's because you're looking at a history of Walt Frazier, of Willis Reed, of Bernard King, of Patrick Ewing, of, Carmelo Anthony. And then look at Carmelo. Five-year deal for Carmelo in 2014. I remember I was in seventh going into eighth grade. I was so hyped he re-signed. 5 years for $122 million, I think it was.
That's a
Anunoby's was 5 years, $212 million. $100 million more for a guy who was – and I love – what OG has done this season for the Knicks, but OG has never made an all-star game and he is not nearly the scorer that Carmelo was. So what I'm saying is I think I'm not sure who should be on their radar, but maybe in terms of centers, if they're really kind of depleted in terms of big men, Andre Drummond, or someone like I'm trying to throw names out there here. I mean maybe you can come up.
Batazzi was a big name that's been kind of circling around Knicks fandom as a cheaper version of, or a cheaper backup center. But yeah, definitely I agree with the Andre Drummond poll.
Yeah, Andre Drummond is just one name, but I think my point is I'm not sure besides a couple names of who they should go after, because part of it is so many guys are demanding money now in a way that they weren't 5, 10 years ago. So, you know, it's a different league. It's a players league where the players have more buying power. You know, the salary cap is punishing us as a result of this new landscape. So I would, as I said, Andre Drummond, if I come up with another name quickly, I'll get back to you. But right now I'm kind of at a loss.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I really dislike the situation the Knicks are in money-wise. I love what they did to OG Anunoby because he was essential. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But going back to Daddy A, I'm not too mad about this. You know, I saw Stephen A's reaction to this, and I think he was a little too excited, but that's just kind of his style. But, you know, Daddy A, he's 6'8". He only averages 1.4 rebounds in the 2022 season. So, you know, that needs to work up. So he has a lot of work to do, but I think either under, you know, Robinson or Hartenstein, if we're able to get him back, he'll be able to grow into that player that we need him to be on the Knicks.
He's also going to be a project pick. I know there was talks about
He's raw right now.
And maybe going back to France for another year, but I mean, he's going to be pretty similar. He probably won't see the court for maybe what, two years, 3 years, pretty similar to Rokas. I can't pronounce Joe. What, do you know how to pronounce his last name right now, Ben? The Lithuanian guy that they picked a couple years ago who's been stashed, been sitting in Europe, and he might fill out a depth contract this year with the Knicks to fill out the roster, because then I think he would be considered a minimum rookie contract, which they wouldn't have an issue with. But you brought up Filipowski. He's still on the board. So second round.
I think he's going to be picked. He's going to be picked before. I mean, when is, remind me again, what is the Knicks pick in the second round? 38.
The eighth pick of the second
round. Maybe he could fall to 38, but that, I feel that would be like a Christmas morning miracle. It'd be like if we somehow snagged him at 38. But I do, that is a name I would say. I mean, Drummond, obviously, but that's why I wish they drafted him last night, is because, you know, with the issue of health, particularly for Robinson, you know, they need someone sturdy who's going to be the backup. I thought Filipowski would be perfect because of his experience at Duke. He's less raw than some other rookies coming in due to his time in college. So I thought he was the right guy to pick, but, you know, we'll see what happens with that. Probably not.
They still do the chance to trade up, because they did acquire the 51st pick last night when they moved to pick number 24. So they could package those 2 seconds to try to move up for him if they really want him available. But that's going to be really it for Knicks draft news. But the big signing of yesterday was OG Anunoby coming back. We talked about this contract, 5 years, $212 million. And while it might seem like a little bit of an overpay for a guy who was injured, they did give up their 2 best assets to get him, with Emmanuel Quickly and RJ Barrett. They only gave up, I think, one second round pick with that deal, but he is a must need for this team. But look how good they were last year. I think him and Brunson were 21-2 together. When him, Randall, and Brunson, they were 13-1. He was a need to bring back for this team, and you kind of had to overpay him. It's kind of similar with the Yankees and Judge. You had to pay Judge whatever he wanted because you couldn't lose him. So it was similar with Anunoby. And yesterday, Ian Begley was reporting that he did have max offers from other teams. So he did want to stay with the Knicks. I know the Knicks, because he was already on the team, he got that fifth year. So this was a huge signing for the Knicks. Just what are your guys' overall thoughts on him coming back and what that means for the team next year?
You know, the Knicks were 20-3 with just Anunoby in the lineup, not including Brunson or Randall. So he just needed to stay with the Knicks. There is no way to justify not bringing him back, considering how well he played alone and then with everyone else on the team. So I think that it's okay that you paid him that amount for now, and then we'll see how he does and go from there. Maybe it'll be like kind of a Ben Simmons situation with the Nets. Hopefully not, but I really like him in Madison Square Garden. I think he's been phenomenal there. And then adding Bridges in that as well, both of them on the rings, it creates this insane defensive dynamic that's just going to be so much fun to watch and such a challenge for the other teams to compete against. And then I think looking forward to this season, the next 5 seasons, the biggest thing that needs to be addressed is Anunoby's health, keeping him healthy, preventing injury. So I think what the Knicks need to do with him right now is make a plan, figuring out what he needs to do pregame, postgame, and then execute it and make sure it works in the long run.
And Tibbs isn't big on load management, but they might have to do that this year with him and Randle, with Randle not being ready for the postseason the last 2 years, and OG barely being able to play 65 games every season. So maybe they'll have to start doing some load management. I know Tibbs hates that, but might have to do it with him because who cares if he's really out for the regular season, but they need him for the playoffs.
Well, before I get to my point, Owen, I do want to note that Randle, besides the injury this past season, has generally been pretty healthy. Generally, despite the short injury, he was out for like 2 weeks in 2022, in the 21-22 season. Randle has generally been pretty durable. Generally pr been pretty durable. I'm not saying he's been a Mikal Bridges, but I think that that injury we saw against the Heat was
Unfortunately, yeah,
a
it was a
result.
freak injury.
Yeah, it was a freak injury, and I surely hope not. Lauren, I don't mean to throw shade, but I hope your prediction does not come true. I hope your
No,
prediction's
me too.
inaccurate. Because I think load management in general, not just for the Knicks, but I think it's bad for the league. I think it makes more fans disengage and makes them not want to tune in or watch games because, oh, it's regular season. These guys are taking it easy. Why should I watch a game or go to a game? And so it's downstream from there where it makes people less interested in watching, the big draw, the star, the Kawhi Leonard, the insert whatever name you want to put in there. But back to Ananobi, I think that the Knicks are a contender when he is on the floor and everyone else is healthy, presumably. I mean, if you looked at the way the Knicks were playing post Ananobi trade, but before the Randle injury, so that little stretch in
January,
January
yeah.
where it was like 2 to 3 weeks, that Knicks team was first in defensive efficiency. I think they were like second in offensive efficiency. They were shutting down the Denver Nuggets, the defending champions, coming into MSG, blowing them out by 20, 25 points.
Think they won that game by
They
40.
40, actually
Yeah.
40, I'm sorry. And that was a healthy Nuggets team too. That was, they were playing them at full strength. So I think that Knicks team with Ananobi shows the potential of what next season could look like. And that's single-handedly because he is on the floor, and it's because of his long wingspan, his impact on perimeter defense, on also on offense, spacing the floor, making a shot from the corner, and even being a playmaker. He's a decent passer. He does everything. There's nothing that he does badly. He does everything well or somewhat well. And so, I think that it was a no-brainer, even though the cost is a lot, to make this decision. Because if the Knicks made the Bridges trade and then they lost OG somehow, that would have been a disaster
That would have been terrible
to start out this
start from
offseason. And
fire.
also, you would have heard our fellow members of the WFUV March Madness group chat giving us a hard time. As some people I won't name were saying OG wouldn't come back after we made the Mikal Bridges trade.
I saw a
And
lot of
luck
that on social media. That was
yes.
one of the worst takes ever.
Yeah,
Even
luckily
the
they were
idea that
all
OG would never come back at all, I thought was a
Well,
horrible thing.
they were all proven wrong, and look at the fact that he has a connection with Leon Rose in
Yeah,
terms
son.
of his son. And I think that it's a no-brainer, as I said. And with him on the floor healthy, and healthy is unfortunately the asterisk, the question mark, with him on the floor, the Knicks can contend with the Celtics, and they can contend if they made the finals against whoever comes out of the West. And I'm excited to see that come to fruition on the floor in a healthy manner next season.
And you meant like his defense, he was the perfect piece of the puzzle between Randle and Brunson because on the offensive side, he doesn't need the ball in his hands to score. He'll constantly cutting.
But he
Remember
can
his first
score.
game, he was just like, oh yeah, I don't know the plays. I was just cutting all over the floor. And I think he finished with like 20 points. So
Yeah.
he fits this offense perfectly because he doesn't need the ball, and neither does Mikal Bridges. And I think you could argue that he might be the best defender of guarding 1 through 5 in the NBA. Like, maybe he's not as like Gobert won defensive player of the year, but if Ananobi ever played,
Kawhi? Kawhi Leonard?
Kawhi doesn't play. I guess they both
Yeah,
are
yeah,
good.
yeah.
But I mean, if Ananobi ever played hit the 65 game limit, he would always be in that conversation for a defensive player of the year. I mean, now Wemby's gonna win it every year from now on. But him and Mikal Bridges, is that the best? That's got to be the best defensive wing duo in the NBA, right?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I mean, that might sound like a bold statement when you first say it, but it doesn't, you know, when you think about it after a little bit. I mean, I can't think of a better 1-2 punch on the perimeter, on the wings, to, you know, to guard the Jason Tatums of the world, to guard the Jaylen Browns, to guard the Tyrese Halliburtons of the world, you know. And we saw that. We saw his absence in the
The Pacers
Indiana
series,
series.
yeah, how big it was. No
You
one could
know,
guard Pascal Siakam.
yeah, and if you know, if he was fully healthy for that series, I mean, this is not a hot take, but the Knicks would have won, I think, in six games. But you know, it's just the hope is that he stays healthy, and that's that. I'm just gonna knock on wood. I have a little piece of wood right next to me, so I'm just, you know, trying not to jinx our whole fan base here. So.
And hopefully we don't lose him for the entire season again.
Yeah,
Most of the
I
season.
got to knock on wood again. You're
Oh yeah, I'll hit it
speaking
too.
that
I'll
into
knock on wood too.
existence. Yeah, you got some wood behind you with your
Yeah,
weirdo
the chairs,
chairs.
my Aztec chairs. So I want to go to the other side of this trade though, going over to Brooklyn. From the Nets' point of view, they obviously had to make a choice of whether or not they were going to go all in star hunting this offseason, or they were going to blow it all up. With the Mikal Bridges getting rid of everyone, getting rid of Dorian Finney-Smith, getting rid of every other person that they had on the roster that's worth value. But it seems like they finally made a decision because going forward, just keeping and hoping to build around Mikal Bridges was never going to work. He's not a 1A superstar type player. He wasn't going to be the guy to carry you to a championship. That's why his fit with New York is so good because he can go back to doing what he's good at. So, I mean, for the Nets, getting four unprotected first round picks, that's a great trade for them, but they finally have picked a choice and they're going to blow it up and rebuild. They also made that trade with the Rockets to get their picks back from the James Harden trade. But what's your guys' thoughts just on from the Nets' point of view on getting rid of Mikal Bridges and the return for him and kind of just the direction of their team going forward?
You know, Bridges was basically the face of the entire Nets franchise, as you were just saying. And he was number one after the KD trade, and losing him is really disappointing and kind of shocking for Nets fans, considering in April he was saying, he's like, yeah, I'm not really looking anywhere else. I want to stay in Brooklyn.
And then he
So,
flipped the trade.
yeah, I mean, we were just talking about this when we were talking on the Knicks side, how shocking this is seeing him coming. We thought it was fake. But looking at their like picks now, I think they're in a really good spot. They're going to have a young team. Next summer is the last year that they'll be paying Ben Simmons, what is it, $40 million contract. So they're going to have a lot of money coming in this next year. Yes, this year is going to be tough to get through, but they had a disappointing last season with Bridges and with their team that they have. So I think implementing these young guys, having, you know, Claxton, which we'll get to in a minute, be their kind of anchor and their like mentor in a way, I think that's going to be a really great way to grow into the team that they're going to really want to become in a few years.
Yeah, I think the Nets are going to be a contender when I'm pushing 30, and you
Maybe
know it's
40.
no, exactly. Sorry, Kurt. I know he's seething in the background. Our producer, Kurt Sippel, who is a Nets fan, but I think that you know now it shows that the Nets, as Lauren noted, are fully in the rebuild time period. And it's going to be another long rebuild. I mean, we saw it, if you remember, when they traded their whole future to get Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. I guess you can sort of include Joe Johnson in that core
Terry,
back.
too, I think.
Yeah, Jason Terry. And that was, I think that was, in hindsight, they realized that was a very poor decision to give away all of that future talent for a bunch of guys and you know in their mid-30s who weren't what they were. And when you saw that short Paul Pierce era end, it was a long rebuild, but it was slow. It was, and eventually, before the Nets got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in 2019, the 18-19 season, they had plenty of picks. They had plenty of cap space, and they had a good team. They had D'Angelo Russell. They had a couple of other role players.
Caris LeVert was a young player.
And they were a up-and-coming team, and then they kind of rearranged over that 2019 offseason, and the rest is history when they got Kyrie and KD. And, you know, it seems that the Nets are always aiming for that huge get. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Jason Terry in 2013, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving in 2019. And unfortunately, both times, just nothing really came to their dreams of what they hoped those rosters could be, never showed up on the court. I mean, remember when they got James Harden and people thought they would, you know, be a dynasty for the next 5 years, and they fizzled out within not even a year. And Harden, they only played the three of them like 13 games together. So it just, that shows you the power of how injuries can mess everything up. But also, you have to rebuild a team the right way, because if you just think that you can tank for a year and, you know, then hope to get the superstar in free agency, that's not going to work. I was a Knicks fan in 2019 when people were saying we're gonna get Zion Williamson and then we're gonna get KD and Kyrie. We saw how that worked out. What looks good, what sounds good in our heads as our own imaginary GMs, does not usually, almost never, pans out the way we think it should on the court. And so the Nets just have to be patient. They have to just kind of take it season by season, and now they're really starting from scratch. But one thing I would say is when they start getting decent, as they accumulate more talent and more youth and more draft picks, they shouldn't make a trigger happy move to get a superstar again and trade away that whole farm, because they did that mistake twice and they have nothing to show for it. Not even a conference title, a conference finals appearance, you know. So they have to, patience is the key. Patience is everything.
Yeah, you're talking about they made the same exact mistake two times in a row, and they got Kyrie and KD through free agency, but then they gave up all those assets to get James Harden in, and then they end up trading James Harden for Ben Simmons, who's now probably the biggest negative asset in the NBA. You made the same mistake twice, and now they're getting rid of Mikal Bridges, and you talked about it. You have to be patient. Like, they're going to be bad the next 5 years. Like, they're going to probably be bottom of the barrel, like 10 wins every single season, like the process Sixers. But you have to stick with it and go through that plan. Like, they did it after Kevin Garnett, and then they just went in, all right, well, now we're going to get James Harden and Kyrie Irving, and then got rid of all their young talent. Like, if you look at all the other teams around the league, it's not really star hunting anymore. If you look at the Celtics.
Right. The Celtics were very patient. Brown.
And then Nuggets, they got through draft picks, Porter Jr., Jokic. And same with the Timberwolves. And the Knicks got it mostly through free agency and trades, but not free agency and trades of superstars, like maximizing young players' talent and getting them in their prime. So if it hasn't really been getting that older, aging star and hoping to like catch like lightning in a bottle and they're just going to turn your franchise around with a couple of young players, that's really not the way anymore. Look at how the Suns tried to do it, and they're now –
Their future is toast.
They have no picks, I think, for about 7 years.
Yeah.
But now it brings me to the trade, though, the Nets just made with the Rockets. The Nets did end up getting their picks back from the James Harden trade. They have their first-round pick in 26 and first round, or 25 and 26. So now they can properly tank and hopefully get Cooper Flagg with the first overall pick next year, who's the top prospect. But they got their picks back, and that was a good trade for the Rockets, too, because now they own the Suns picks. So now they're trying to get Kevin Durant, which just goes back to how the Suns built their team. They either have to hope KD, Booker, and Beal can build a team together, or they're going to have to send KD to Houston for their picks back, which is definitely a whole interesting thing. But that trade for the Nets, I think, was really good with the Rockets. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I think that would have been better than their Bridges trade, like the haul they got back.
Yeah, I agree. I really like it. I think, you know, I was on Nosebleeds a couple weeks ago, and obviously that's baseball and everything, but we were talking about how the Mets should really utilize their farm system, and that's how exactly I feel about the Nets. I think you should utilize what you have, and then you'll be able to, like, make your team how you want to make it. You don't have to like bring in this big star who has his own way of working and everything that's going to try and make everyone else work around him. You're going to have your team work around each other, and that's just really how to make a successful team, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with Laura, and I think it's a good move. I think time will tell if it's a better move than the Bridges trade, Owen, but you know, you have to go about rebuilding organically, because if you try to you know, just skip steps and use free agency, as I noted, that usually doesn't end very well. So it's smart planning from the Nets front office, planning for the future, and we'll see what these picks turn into. I mean, hopefully we'll get to see some great young talent in Brooklyn. And let's just be honest. I mean, going back to Mikal Bridges for a second, he didn't really have a future in Brooklyn. I mean, he's not as young as the other guys on that team. He's pushing 28. He's going to be 30 in a few years. He's looking to be on a contending team, which he now is. So he was going nowhere with that core. So now that they have a really young core, you know, just fresh, brand new, there's no stakes. There's no pressure. And when you have a guy like Bridges, it almost gives the illusion that you're still trying to contend for something, trying to make the playoffs. The Nets have no expectations, and that's a good thing for them right now.
Yeah.
They're biding their time. The Nets are like the villain biding his time over years. Like, if you ever seen Lord of the Rings, it's like Sauron. He doesn't exist yet. Or Voldemort, if you like Harry Potter. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm more Harry Potter guy.
Yeah, okay. I want to use fantasy you guys relate to, so I don't mean to be a nerd. But the point is that the Nets are the villain who is, you know, greatly damaged from his previous failures, but biding their time right now. And so when the Nets come back to full strength and, you know, half a decade or maybe more than that, I think they're going to be formidable. But as of right now, they're the villain tackling in their hideaway, and they're getting ready. They're preparing for the future. So I like what I see so far from the Nets.
And before we run out of time here, I just want to get some, the draft was last night, get some first round thoughts. So I want to hear from you guys. Who is your sleeper picker of the draft or favorite pick of the draft so far? And who do you think is going to be like maybe a bust or was drafted a little too high? I'm going to start off here. I think Dalton Kennett going to the Lakers was an absolute steal for them. Him being one of the best shooters in all of college basketball. I think he shot 40% from three last season. That is an absolute steal for them falling to 17. At one point, he was projected top 10. So I think that's probably the best pick so far of the draft. And I know Julia Moss wasn't too happy about this one, but Zach Edey going number 9. I think that's got to be one of the worst picks I've seen in a long time. I think he's very overrated. So I think that's one of the worst picks I've ever seen. So I just want to hear your guys' thoughts real quick as we run out of time here.
I'm in full agreement with you, Owen. I was going to say, you know, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think Zach Edey is going to be a bust. I think he's not going to translate well. You know, what he did in college is not going to translate to the NBA. And I think he's not going to do much with the Grizzlies. And I think he'll fizzle out within a few years. Chris Persiainen, former Knicks beat reporter last year, he disagrees, but I guess we'll see who's right. We'll end up watching what happens. But then I will say briefly, because I know we're running out of time, I think the best player in this draft, not the biggest steal, but the best player in this draft, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Duke fan, or maybe I am a little bit, Jared McCain is the most underrated player in this draft. I think his potential, I think he can be a star in the NBA. He's raw right now, but he has the shooting ability. He is a, you know, he's a scorer. He's a small shooting guard, but I think Jared McCain could be something like Donovan Mitchell, to be honest.
Very briefly, I'm going to go with a popular opinion. Number one pick, Risa Shea. I really like him. I think he's going to be great on the Hawks, considering how disappointing they have been this past season. And like, I think he's just going to fit the dynamic wonderfully. I'm really excited to see how he works. And I'm really happy that like another Frenchman went first after Wembanyama last year. I'm really loving this like theme we got going on. And I cannot wait to see how he plays this season.
All right. Well, I didn't think he was going to be the first overall pick. I thought Alex Saar, but overall, that top five of the draft really wasn't as high end of talent as we had years in the past. So a lot of those guys are going to be project picks where later in the draft, more teams were looking for guys that were going to affect their rotation immediately. But unfortunately, we're going to be out of time here. For Ben Oppenheimer, Lauren Mondrulli, I'm Owen Kelty. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.